Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
Come on, John. Can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
Friday at 8 p.m. we bring you this martial art intellectual conversation in which we like to include you as part of our family on this radio station we call DocRadio.net. Each and every time that we come here, we are always impressed by the amount of people who come into our circle to discuss what's going on in the martial art world. So we welcome you to our program here this evening. I want my co-host, Hanshi Salim al-Rashid. Salim, are you there?
Yes, sir. How are you? It's okay.
I'm blessed, brother. I seen you was online, but I wasn't quite sure if you was available. How's everything in the back office there? Everything good?
Oh, yeah, it's popping. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The weather didn't stop me from calling in, and I'm loving it.
Great, great, great. Glad you can make it. Just telling our audiences that our listenership is growing a little bit more each and every time we come back. We had a great show last week and want to continue to bring them out there. And then plus, if you have any information, please just write into us at docradio.net or just call and let us know what you'd like to discuss on the show, and maybe we can get that subject matter on. What we do here on this particular show is we started out by talking about a little bit of news inside of the martial art community. Again, this is just part of a series of radio shows that go on from Sunday through Saturday, and Monday through Saturday. The only show we don't have is on a Sunday show. We have a children's program on Saturday as well. But again, we just want you to be a part of all of it. So if you get a chance throughout the week, listen to some of our other shows as well with some very interesting subject matter on it. This particular show is being broadcast in the month of June. And here in the first week of June, we're celebrating our annual Kuroshi Kai Jitsu Karate Do, which is celebrating another anniversary year. They're going to be holding their graduation promotion and dinner ceremonies at 1540 Van Sicklin Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. If you're in the neighborhood, stop in and stop by, say hello. We'd love to have you there. Ceremony starts at about 1 o'clock on Saturday, June 7th. So congratulations to all the Kuroshika Jitsu Karate Do Warriors on their promotions and celebrating another year in the system. I know you're supposed to bank it out to that as well. Is that correct, Hanshi?
Say that. I was in the backwards. What did you say, sir?
I was saying that I know that you were supposed to make it out to the anniversary for Kuroshika.
Yes,
yes, indeed. Most definitely. So, again, anyone that's in the neighborhood, know that you're welcome to come out to that show as well. Also, on June 28th, the end of this month, is the second Sanukis Rule Family of Sanukis training concept. We could say the concepts of Sanukis Rule will be trained at on that day. We had a curriculum training the first time. It was a great turnout for that. And we're going to have it at the same place at 392 Blake Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. That area code is 11212. Hopefully you can find your way in there. We're going to be, again, there's a couple of shows in between now and that time. We will be announcing it again. But it was a great time to come out and learn some of the concepts taught to the Grand Masters of Sanukis Rule Jiu-Jitsu. And we'll be out there that Saturday, June 28th. And I think the last thing I want to mention for about the month of June as we come into that next week, the preparation for Father's Day. We joked about this before, Hanshi. We got to keep reminding people about Father's Day. We'll have to remind them about Mother's Day, but we got to keep them abreast of Father's Day because we don't want somebody to lose track of that. So as Eddie Murphy would say, go out and get that Old Spice and get ready to put it in the socks or with the tie or whatever it is, but show those fathers some appreciation as we come into Father's Day 2014.
Yes, sir.
I guess we can sort of segue into our today's conversation, which we posted up, Hanshi, and I guess we can make this a part 1 through 1,000 because it's always going to be controversial about how we deal with this subject. And what we ask in this particular forum is, how do you prepare yourself for a multiple attack? Or how have you been trained to prepare yourself for a multiple attack? Or even if maybe you haven't been trained at all. And, you know, Hanshi, every time I say that question out loud, I know that I'm not just talking about martial artists. You know, I'm talking about people in general. You know, you don't have to be a martial artist to prepare yourself for a multiple attack, you know. You don't have to be a human to get bit by a dog. You know what I'm saying? A couple of things. I'm just trying to bring out that there's no conditions for these things. You know, you don't have to be a certain type. People that's fully armed get attacked by multiple attacks. People that went out for a night on the town in a restaurant got multiple attacked. You may have been minding your business and walked into the middle of a fight and got multiple attacked. And I think one of the strange components of multiple attackers is that nobody pretty much knows who's who. Would you agree with that, Hanshi? Bunch of people are throwing things and attacking you from different angles and stuff. You can't just say, these guys are on my side because they're the same complexion as me, or they all got the same coat on, so I guess these guys are on my side, and I guess those guys are my attackers. Your attacker can look like you. He could be a part of – he may have been on your side 15 minutes ago, but now when the multiple attack come out – and I think we can look at this in a couple of different ways. We could look at this like the brawl fight kind of multiple attack. We could look at this in a self-defense mode multiple attack. We could look at this in the preempted multiple attack as well as a surprise. So there's a lot of ways to get multiple attack. Would you agree?
Yes, sir. I mean, you know, I experienced some of that myself growing up. And the first thing pops in my mind is situational awareness. That's the very first thing. And if you are not aware, you will be in some kind of difficulty.
Well, let's go back a little bit. Let's use your scenario. Was this a mugging type thing, or was this a gang thing? Was you know, to paraphrase the streets, were you jumped or what? Did somebody jump you or what? What was going on with your situation?
This was a gang thing, you know.
Okay.
What we termed as a gang thing back in the day. And, you know, you're fighting two dudes, and the next thing you know, the project is emptying out, you know.
Okay. Yeah, that's a scenario all by itself, right, right.
Yes, sir. You know.
Tell us a little bit about the outcome of that, if you don't mind sharing that story.
Well, actually, you know what? You know, we, I'll say we, it was like two or three of you included.
Which one did you talk about? Cause we've been in a couple of them, brother.
The one I remember, we went down to help somebody.
Oh, and, yeah, I remember that one.
You remember that one?
You wind up having a whole thing chase us. Yeah, I remember that one.
Yes, sir. You know, we lived to fight another day. You know, we're not standing there, you know, in club like,
right.
Okay, listen, there's three of us, there's 100 of them. Let's rethink this.
right.
So, yeah. And, you know, other skirmishes after that and, you know, putting it due to creative, man, we turned out okay. You know, we were
mm-hmm.
victorious one way or the other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess
we can share with our listeners as far as preparation and mindset, okay, if we can go in that direction for a minute. Because, you know,
yes.
as much as I can remember that situation that you're describing, I remember it was mindset got changed very quickly there. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, because exactly. What happened was, as you stated earlier, not to tell too much of the story, but, you know, what you said was true. We went there to help somebody. And
right.
We went into a crowd of people, and we went to help somebody. And these people who we went to help and set the situation off more. You know, they turned into a volatile situation. And we came as peacemakers to help them get out
right.
of there, and they set it off, and it went into a melee kind of thing. But the point I was trying to make is that we didn't go in there thinking that we had to, quote-unquote, protect ourselves. We call ourselves being the protectors. Only to
right.
find out that we had to watch our own back, so to speak.
Right.
Which, you know,
right.
is really, again, back to what I said earlier about mindset, which is something you should have anyway. And we learned that real early on, that your mindset should always be in a protection mode of yourself, whether you're going to help somebody or not. So what could we say for that about preparation for multiple attack when it comes to mindset? What kind of contributions could you make to that?
Well, first of all, if you're dealing with, you know, you're dealing with a quote unquote a mugging or it's uncomfortable, you know, if you assess the situation, even if it's two people, you have to know, and we all know, we say this in Sanukis, that wolves travel in packs.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you know, and what comes to mind is like even if you took two guys down. The samurai used to say, when the battle is over, cinch your chin strap, which means that it ain't over. Be prepared for something else. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't stand around and look at your handiwork, oh, yeah, I took these two guys down, because there may be some
mm-hmm.
people sitting on the benches watching.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So these are things that, you know, I keep in mind, and, you know, you don't want to stay too long at the dance. Get in, get out. You know,
mm-hmm.
and if that means running, run. There's no shame in that. You know, there's no shame in that. You know, with all your martial arts skills, you see a brick, pick it up. You know, use your environment. We're taught that. Use your environment to survive. It becomes a survival thing in a crowd situation. It's a system of survival. You know, use your environment. You see a brick, pick it up. You know, you talk about fair fight. You know, fair fight is when you walk home. That's just my opinion. When you get home, it's a fair fight, you know.
Well, that's great input, you know, for that type of situation. But can we speak to the layperson on the phone that may have called in, and hopefully, again, we get some people that will call in and comment on this. Our number, again, is 646-716-6825. And we're very interested in hearing your comments on this. And, you know, how do you prepare for a multiple attack, or do you prepare at all? And I'm going to turn this in the direction of the layperson, and I say that the layperson as in a person who doesn't practice martial art, but nevertheless would be kind of like listening, maybe get some pointers in what they should be preparing for in the multiple attack. Now, we all know that any attack, whether it's a multiple one or not, the term I like to use is it's encrypted, meaning that there's no way in the world you're going to figure that out in a code, like to say, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, you know. And that encrypted factor, the mere fact that it just changes on a dime all the time, it's very hard to have a preempted method of defense. But what you have to have is an overall method of defense. And, you know, one of those things that we just mentioned is watching your back, and that doesn't mean literally with your eyes. It means, you know, having that that 360 scan. And I've taught this many times before. We refer to it as a five-second scan, meaning that, you know, every 5 seconds you should be looking, you know, at something else around you. You know, like your eyes are like a scanning camera. And for the most part, you're not doing that looking for things. And I just want to caution the layperson that's listening to me when I say that. I don't want you to what's that animal? I don't want you to be like a meerkat, you know, those little animals that seem like they turn it every 5 seconds. Like, what's that? What was that? What was that? What was that? You know, or a deer in the forest looking around, looking for, every time you hear a twig snap, you know, you're jumping. That's not what I'm talking about with the scan. You're really scanning to see if there's any difference in the last time you looked in that area. You understand what I'm saying, Ozzy? You know, if I'm looking at something, I kind of like wondering, and I play this game often myself or on my phone and other things like that. You know, that you ever seen that what's different about this picture? You know, it's a game where you look at two pictures, they look almost identical, but something about this one is different from that one. And I believe that if you can, when an attack is imminent, if someone's trying to sneak up on you, something has changed. And the last time that you scanned, this wasn't there before. That guy's there just a little bit too long. He seems to be avoiding looking in my direction. You can tell when somebody is avoiding looking at you. Why is that seem to be, you know, as they said before, if the little things that make the hair in the back of your neck stand up, you need to be cognizant of those things because that's your body telling you something. And it's very, very good to be able to train your paranoia. And I say train your paranoia because, you know, people have a tendency to not want to be paranoid. But that's sometimes that paranoia can save your life. 646-716-6825. I didn't want to turn this into a conversation with just you and I so much, Hanshi, but let's see if someone else is on the line. We have anybody in the back office?
Yes, sir. We have Sensei Eric Holman.
Oh, us.
Well, it's okay. How are you?
Sensei, great to hear you again, my brother. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. I'm sorry I missed a few shows there, but it's always great to hear from you.
Yes, sir. And you as well, brother. Just want to see your input.
Thank you. You know, it's funny. You said it right in the head. You hit it right in the head when you said trained paranoia. And, you know, it's a game that my wife laughs at me a lot of times because it's a game that I played for myself because I started martial arts. And, you know, she says, you know, why do you have to count where the exit door is at? Why do you have to count how many people are in the room? And she goes, she looked at me one time and she had said, we're in a barbershop, and she goes, she looked at me and she goes, how many people are in the room right now? I said, including you, 12. And she laughed. And she says, you're paranoid. Why are you paranoid? I said, it's not that I'm paranoid. It's just that I feel I'm going to do everything possible to give myself a chance. That's the name of the deal. I want to give myself a chance. You know, I'll sit and you have to have those roaming eyes. And I think that's how you prepare, is having that trained paranoia. You know, I walk down the block, I make sure I walk in the middle of the block. I make sure that, you know, if there's a tree there, you know, I say to myself, somebody can be behind that tree. So I look at a car. When I see a car, two cars parked, I'm not looking at the license plate of the car. I'm looking at to see if I see feet underneath the car or a shadow underneath the car or shadow between the two cars. And some people say that's paranoia, but I say that's trained paranoia because I want to give myself the chance. I want to give myself that opportunity. And that's it. And a lot of times, we all know when you're going to get mugged, sometimes they come out of nowhere. Sometimes they know your schedule. They know your pattern better than you know yourself at times.
Better than you. So absolutely.
and they're going to come from you at all angles, and you got to be able to say, like you said before, why is that picture looking different? Why is that guy has his head down? He just looked at me a second ago. Now he puts his head down. Now he's looking across the street. Now he's looking left over. Why is he doing that? And you have to question yourself of that. And
yes,
like I said, I mean, my wife says I'm paranoid, but I think it's a good thing.
And I agree with you, brother. And, you know, the mere fact that she's cognizant of you being paranoid is perhaps something that can better help you both. And also maybe some of that paranoia will rub off on her. And as I said before, you know, we say train because we don't want it to get out of hand and we don't want to have to take medication for this thing. But it is something that we can actually use to our advantage because we can apply it to the training that we already have. Now, leaving it in the box or in the school, so to speak, or leaving it in as one of my good friends, Grandmaster Bill McLeod would say, you know, he said we train in a clinical environment. It's a clean environment inside of a dojo. What I mean by that is that, you know, things are we're pumping it up to real, but it's we don't really put it into the environment or the state of mind that it needs to be in and to get down and dirty. And in some of the seminars that we do, and I know that Osensei Hernandez has done with you as well, my good brother, and also Dr. Powell, as well as my Sanukis brothers, we get kind of down and dirty. Would you agree?
What's up? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. And, you know, with that, what I mean that is that we don't do everything in a ready-get-set-go kind of thing. And I think that's part of training for a multiple attack as well. You're going to get strikes simultaneously. You're going to move around with the person. You know, in the art of Aikido, I just want to pull you into this, Sensei, before you leave. In the art of Aikido, there's a form of training that they have that is so, so profound because it really does bring the realness out of Aikido, you know, because some people have a tendency to think Aikido has just a controlled environment, you know. The Uki comes at the Tori does whatever. He hardly ever hits him. You know, he just redirects and he takes him down. Ah, yeah, that's not martial art. You know, how are you going to hit somebody like that? But they elevate to a point that they call Ramdori. And in Ramdori is, part of their training is they have six guys come at you full force. Is everyone on the line familiar with this?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. And with that, with these guys coming at you, there's no preempt anything. They're not saying one come behind another. They all got their hands out extended, and you have to just move and maneuver around these people and not get trampled upon. You know, and it's sort of like if they can touch you or stay on you too long is to emanate that one of those touches could have been a strike, and that strike could have been the one that had put you down. So in Ramdori and Aikido, it's teaching you to keep moving and to be fluent. How much value do you think that has inside of a multiple attack, the movement of your body and just not being able to be touched?
You know, you have to have that type of body. You have to be able to move. And you know,
mm-hmm.
and battle is not pretty. Battle is not pretty at all. We're in a controlled environment in the dojo where we have our okis and we can throw first there.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, I have friends who are detectives and cops, and they even say it themselves. You know, on TV, it looks good when the guy shoots the guy and the guy falls. That necessarily doesn't happen. That person
mm-hmm.
still comes at you. And,
mm-hmm.
and in battle, it's never pretty. And you're going to have to throw people around, you're going to have to tie somebody, move you out of the way. Sometimes
yes.
you're going to have to just say, I'm just going to have to run, and that's it, as the gentleman said earlier. Sometimes your best weapon may be, wait a minute, it's just too many of them. I need to run the game, to not so much run for your life, so to speak, but run to gain space, to get spacing between
yes,
them and break up their pattern. While it may seem your pattern's being broken up, you're disturbing their pattern. Get shrink them down to a one-on-one situation instead of allowing five or six to come at you at the same time. So
yes, sir.
Movement is big. Movement is the key. You have to move. You can't stay in straight line.
I believe that that's very true, sir. And I think what happens here is that when we talk about the layperson or even some karate styles and as well, there's a lot of fixation in there to stand your ground and fight. And there is a time to do that, and there's a time to move. But I believe that if I had to have preference and a multiple attack, which is this conversation is about, I would be more inclined to move towards my movement skills because they can't touch what they can't see or if I'm not there. So, you know, I guess to put it in your terms is that we have to use the Shinobi arts and, you know, and become invisible. So say thank you again for calling there, brother. You know, if you hang on, maybe we can get you back into the conversation. Just want to see if someone else is on the line. But my best to the family, sir.
Yes, sir, as always, sir.
Thank you, brother. Sensei Eric Coleman, putting in, you know, a valuable part of this conversation and talking about how it pays to move and again, how to control that that paranoia or train that paranoia to work for you. And maybe even, you know, he mentioned his wife, Hanshi. He said that his wife was very cognizant of him being that way. Would you think that that would be something maybe she should pick up from him as well? You know, because maybe she's not on the floor training with him, but maybe that kind of paranoia, you know how it is if, say, if she's looking at her husband and she sees her husband's face change, maybe that's an indication that she needs to, you know, get ready for something. You know, I know what that look means on my husband. You know what I'm saying, though, Hanshi?
Yes, sir. I believe that if a couple are together for a substantial amount of time, even if the wife's not on the or the husband is not on the mat, they pick up things by osmosis if they don't even realize it, you know. And it puts them on point, you know, because I'll say different things to my wife, you know, as far as, you know, get in front of me or stand to the side of me, you know. And she won't say, well, what's going on? What's up? Why do you want me to do that? Automatically she does it, you know. And
would you think that that would be a good thing to go on and teach our children as well? You know, again, they may not be on the mat with us, but they know when daddy, you know, does that with his lip or whatever, when he does that with his eyes, that means, you know, prepare, you know, stop playing. Watch what I do, move when I move where I say move, you know, because sometimes you can't give a verbal command to warn somebody, and as you just said, when you do give one, you don't really want it questioned because,
yes.
You know, that's a whole other subject again, other than what we're talking about, but that osmosis thing, that thing of someone knowing how to get ready for you, because that's another factor in this particular conversation. What happens when you multiple attack and it's not just you? It's one thing to watch your back, but it's another thing when they're attacking you. And, again, back to the term that you used earlier, wolves travel in packs, that's what they do. You know, they'll try to assault your loved ones, and you're paying attention to that. That's enough to calm anybody's fight, and they'll do that. That's why they're doing that. They, you know, they want to calm you down by like, hey, they got your lady by the neck. You know, trust me, that is going to change your mindset. And if you're on this line and you're saying it won't, I don't know how you train or who's training you, but it will. And even so much as it can make you have tunnel vision and become so angry until you don't see other things. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And that could be just as worse, you know, spending too much time on one individual, things like that. I think that's our subject matter for today. I'm trying to get more into that and see if we can get some more people to chime in as well. Again, our number, 646-716-6825. You know, Hanshi, I started this subject out by saying that, you know, this could be a part one and part 100 even, because this can go on days if we break it up into different components, you know, if we break it up into multiple fights as in, you know, as you said, gang fights, multiple assaults as in somebody jumping you, multiple assaults with weapons, you know, and I don't want to go too far from the subject, but let me see if we can entertain that for a minute before we bring someone else in, or maybe even if Sensei's back online, bring him in on that part of the subject and say, we understand it is now multiple attacks, and it's very obvious because they're banishing them in front of us. That now they have weapons, maybe not all of them, but you know, how do we prepare for that? You want to give us your input on that? Preparing for multiple attack attackers.
Yes, sir. I would. I'm going to put this in for a layman, okay? Because you know, we dwell a lot on those that are professionals, but in layman's terms, I want to say first of all, if you're on a subway. And the car's crowded, you don't feel comfortable, get on another car or wait. You see, don't put yourself in a situation to be exposed. If you're with your lady friend, your wife, whatever, your kid, sit them down don't have them there. Give them your seat so you know that they're basically stationary, you see. As far as weapons is concerned, when there's a weapon, my mentality is to get off first. All bets are off when you're brandishing a weapon. And it's a thing in my mentality, and my mentality only, that I'm going to take you out. You know, there's no...
Well, you know, I kind of like want to, you know, again, go into the mindset, because if... I want to be realistic here, Hanshi, you know, and I'm not saying, I'm not demeaning your comment at all, but I'm just going to keep it real here, okay?
Okay.
It's multiple attacks, and they say you ain't got no eyes in the back of your head, all right? And
that's
again,
right.
Using the wolves traveling packs concept, they're waiting for you. I'm waiting for you. If I'm in this gang and I'm jumping you, I'm waiting for you to spend some time on my boy. I don't really care about him anyway. You know, so you can bust him up all you want, but I'm going to bust you in the back of your head while you working on him. That's what I do. When you're down on the ground, I'm going to kick you simply because I'm in the back of you where you can't fight back. I'm going to kick you the hardest there. You know, I'm going to put my foot on your head when somebody else got their foot on your head. I'm not even going to wait for him to take his foot off you. I'm jumping you. I'm about to put as much pain on you as possible, especially if I think you know something. Why? Because
I'm
scared of you, all right? I'm scared that you may do just that. You know, I'm scared that you may have a weapon on you. I'm feeling confident in the fact that all of us have aggression, meaning the people who are jumping you. All of us have enough aggression on you that we're going to beat you down. Okay, who you are. Okay, so with that in mind, and I know that these guys are armed. Now, remind you that usually when a person has a weapon, it is very hard to get in their range. And if you got in one range, then you just put yourself out of range from the one behind you or to the left or the right of you. And whether it's sticks or whatever, knives or whatever, when it comes to a multiple attack, these people are going to strike every part of your body. Everybody's not just swinging for your head and your back or whatever.
That's right.
Again,
I'm trying
to just draw a scenario for you that you may not survive this. What is your mindset now? What is the thing? Like you said, I guess like what you're saying, hey, somebody going down with me. They better make a dual casket because somebody going in the box with me. And I get
that. Sir.
But what my point is, what are some of the things that I can do as a mindset to be able to make this thing turn in my advantage? Because this is my contribution. Once I can change the mindset of the individuals that's attacking me, meaning that this ain't going to turn out the way y'all thought it was, right there I'm in control to a certain degree. All right, but if I allow this to get into a thing where they're orchestrating the attack from beginning, the middle, and the end, then what chance do I stand? You see, and I say that because, again, we don't want to go into sacrificial techniques inside of this because there's multiple attackers. You know, and this is one reason why we don't really advocate too much of what a lot of the BJJ goes into now. And, again, I'm not saying nothing bad about the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but we, in a multiple attack, you don't belong on the ground. I don't believe that you belong. Just that's my personal opinion. But, again, let's see if we can get in somebody else in the conversation. Multiple attack, armed or silence. Anybody else in our back office?
We have Soke Austin, I believe.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story about him real quick before he get on here, right? You know, I usually turn my phone down before I start the show, and the phone starts ringing,
sir.
Right? Guess who's on
the
other line?
Soke Austin.
My brother. Well, now that we got him on this live, and I'm always glad to have him anxious to get on the show, but we got to get that man a speed dial or something. Soke Austin, you there?
Push. I'm here.
What's going on, brother?
Hey, nothing, man. How your brother? How your brother doing?
Everybody's
well,
good
man.
Today.
Well.
Okay. So, I just want to. I'm on the show, boo. Please open the door. Yeah, I just want to get this. Get everything straight. Now, you saying how would you defend yourself from multiple attack? And I just heard you say that as a result of the multiple attack, you shouldn't be on the ground. Your opponent should be on the ground.
What I was saying, I was just putting my personal input to it that being on the ground and trying to defend myself while I'm down there, you know, trying to, quote, unquote, get somebody to tap out wouldn't be a profitable thing for me in my mindset to spend that kind of time on the ground in a multiple attack. And again, you know, I'm not saying anything bad. I happen to like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's just that, and I actually know that if you're playing it for real, you're not going to hole a person in a lock. You're gonna break the arm and get up and get out of there. You know, it's not going to be a long, drawn-out process. But my point is that since a lot of their entry is about going directly to the ground and taking him down to get him to submit in a multiple situation, it was just my preference not to go down there immediately for me to be on my feet as long as I possibly can. But that was my point that I was making on that. But back to what the question was now we have a multiple attack, and it's arm assailants. We just went a little bit deeper into our subject matter for today was how do you prepare for a multiple attack, but now we've gotten to the point where we're asking the question, how would you deal with it then now that your assailants are armed?
Okay, now I get the gist of the question. Yeah, well, this is what I would do. This is what I've always taught my students to do, I think, is to concentrate on the opponent that's standing in front of you. The one that's standing in front of you is the one that's blocking you. I'm not talking about all the ones on the sides of the scene. The one that's standing in front of you is the one that's impeding your way, that's stopping you from... I would tell the students to, once you mow him down, then keep on going. There is no shame in getting out of the situation. But this guy is standing in front of me, I'm going to mow him down, and I'm going to keep on getting out of it. I'm not going to...
Okay,
it's not my job.
It's hard to hear you. So,
hello?
I get your point, but
okay.
Let me see if we have Nate Coleman is still on the line, and maybe it's a difference of opinion, or see if he concurs with what you're saying. Hanshi, is Sensei still on the line?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Maybe we can bring Sensei Coleman back and see if he can concur with you, or see if we can get some conversation going here. Sensei Soke Austin is on the line, and he says in his opinion, concentrate and focus on that person that's in front of you. And as he just put it, mold a person down. What's your comments on that?
I'm depending on the scenario, I think I'm going to have to agree with that. And it's what I personally call, I have to make a profound statement. I have to make a very strong, profound statement. Because that many, in these conversations, and I was on several of the shows, you said something of several shows back, maybe it was even last year, not everybody can handle the sight of blood or the sight of a breaking or sight of something. Not everybody has the strong mindset for that.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I'm going to have to make the strongest, profound statement on that first individual to change the mindset of the other individuals that surround me. Whether now I may not be able to get that shot off like the way I would like to, but if I can jab in the eye, if I can get a thumb in the eye, if I can get a hand on the throat, if I can get a shot in the throat, the eye, something, or even even break a kneecap, in the sense of showing that profound statement, that may change the outcome. They may be like, yo, get him, kid, bam, it happens. They may say, well, we'll pick our boy up and go another way. You don't know. But that first one has to be a profound statement. It has to be a profound statement.
Okay, great. And I concur with you as well. Thank you for that input. But I can see you ain't playing. Eyes, throat, and nose, and kneecaps.
That's right.
That's a great statement to make. So, you know, Sensei Coleman concurs with you on that. And gentlemen, I think that's a great point. I think that we're on the track now where I want everyone to be. For our layperson that's listening, maybe some young ranks that's listening or whatever, that maybe, you know, today's tournaments now personifies, jump up, do a double hook kick, a roundhouse kick, and do this, that, and the other. And a multiple attack, that would not be the way to go. And I think that you gentlemen are concurring that by saying, hey, let's make this statement and let's walk over this guy like almost like he wasn't there and then ask the proverbial question, what? We know sometimes we don't even have to say those words. When we finish working, we just look at the next person like, what's going on here? All right, so thank you for that, gentlemen. 646-716-6825, that's our number. Our conversation today is really, it started out really very clean in the sense we're not talking fluff here today. We're talking about some serious stuff here. And I drew a scenario picture so that everyone can see that we're not talking about contests here. We're not talking about, knocking a guy down and waiting for him to get up and
all
over him. You know, we're talking now about multiple people, and they won't always stop. And in Sensei Coleman said, depending on their intentions, you're really going to have to make a statement and make it clean and make it fast and make it hard. And Ahsoka Austin started out by saying that very same thing, mold that person down. Hanshi, you know, we got some live conversation here today. Can you take this in not another direction, because you add a little bit more to what's going on with this this multiple attacking of multiple attackers and their arm. What's your input on that?
Well, you know, I'm in agreement. You want to, with a multiple attack in their arm, with a multiple attack period, I want to inflict the most damage automatically, the most damage that I can, first person. And basically,
okay. Now, I'm
going to ripple through the crowd. You know, I want to send a ripple through the water, you see.
But, you know, Soki Austin had brought a great point up, and he said that this person is impeding your way. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about where we at when this multiple attack happens. Are we in a broad open space? Are we in a restaurant? Or is there somebody impeding our direction or whatever? Can we do some things to change the situation? If we're in a well-lit place, and we have the ability to change the lighting, so to speak. Can we survey the room, know which way we're going to exit, but put the lights out maybe? Could that help? You know, what we're talking about here, and you don't have to forgive me, Sensei Coleman, if I get into my ninja skills here a little bit, but we have to be very creative about our self-defense. Would you agree, gentlemen?
Yes, sir.
And so what I mean by that is that if there are chairs in the room, I might want to take and run a couple of them. You know, if maybe some chairs in the room got some wheels on, I may want to wheel them right across the room at somebody's kneecaps in order to, you know, help me get out of that. If there's, a box of salt around, I may want to throw that, get salt in my hand and start blinding people. You know, I want to turn into the Shinobi boy up in here. You know, and we turn it into a ninjutsu movie if we have to, but if it means that we're going to get out of there safely, maybe the punching and the kicking of these assailants is not necessarily the way out. You know, can anybody add to that?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to add to that one in the sense, you know, I go out with my wife a lot. We go to different, you know, my wife likes to dance, and we'll go to different salsa clubs and things like that. And, you know, once again, you know, I'll survey the room. I'll say, where's my exit and everything. Once I feel comfortable knowing that, you know, I hold a drink. I'm not a drinker, but why is it that I'm holding a beer bottle? And I'll milk that beer down to the last drop. But if I've never been in that place before, I'm holding it for a reason, and that's called trained paranoia. If I have to clock someone with that beer bottle to protect me and my wife, then I'm doing so. I'll stand by this. Battle is not pretty. If you have to throw a bottle, you throw a bottle. You have to kick a chair, kick a chair. But if your life is on the line, you have to get out. You're going to do everything possible. One of the biggest things Hernandez used to tell me, if you're in the street, how many cars you walk by, not so many cars today, but how many cars back in the day used to walk by and used to see the antennas, those wired antennas, grab one of those off, bust really one of those. It's just the way it is. You're going to have to fight for your life.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Hello? So, Bill Austin, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to elaborate on the point I just made. You know, for instance, if you're surrounded by assailants, that means, you know, okay, they got you surrounded. You understand? You don't know what the guys on the side of you got, although you see them on the side, peripherally, and you don't see the guy in the back of you at all. I'm not concerned with either guy on the side or whatever. All I'm concerned with is getting out of that circle. And the only way I'm going to get in the circle is to mow down the guy in front of me. Now, you know what? Once I mow him down, I'm getting out of there. Now, even if I'm
but, you know,
pursued by
the
other guys,
the point I was making, I was trying to get to you more than anything else, is that the scenario of your back, you know, multiple attack and the people are coming at you from all angles. And I agree with you about mowing the person down and since they come and said making a statement. But I do want to keep it real here, gentlemen. There comes a point when you don't know who's behind you. We're talking about a multiple attack. Understand what I'm just saying, though, Soke, because let me finish the statement, because what you just did was you expose your back to multiple people behind you. And if they got weapons and you expose your back to them, there's no martial art for that. Olsensei Duncan made that very adamant in many seminars that I went to. He said to many times, there is no defense against the element of surprise. So, you know, let's kind of be real about that. You can mow them down in front of you, but you got people behind you now.
Listen,
you're going to get stabbed.
Okay. Let me try to clarify this, right? Here's a scenario, and if I'm wrong, then please correct me. Here's a scenario. You all of a sudden, you know, you encounter assailants, and they surround you. Is this the scenario that you're talking about? They surround you, right? You don't know who's behind you. You shouldn't be concerned who's behind you. You shouldn't be concerned, really, who's on the side of you. The only thing that you should be concerned is the guy in front of you, because he's impeding you. He's stopping your progress. Now, this is what I'm saying. I'm going to knock him down. I'm going to use all my efforts to get out of, and I'm going to knock him down, because I know that once I knock him down, then I have a means of escape. That's all I'm saying. Once I knock him down, if I have to run, then I would run. There's no shame in running. You understand? A scary dog carries a whole bone. And there's no shame in running. I don't worry about who's behind me. I'm not going to sit there and trunk it back
okay,
to Bruce
okay,
Lee.
Okay, okay.
No.
I get your point. Hello?
I'm going to finish up.
Okay, please do, because it's only an hour show, but go ahead.
Right. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, because you repeat the same thing, and I heard you the first time. You're just saying it louder. But I get your point. But you're entitled to your opinion, but you haven't really said anything different. So I want you to add to what you already been saying. But I get that part. You're going to mow the person down, and you only concerned about that person. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. Because that's what's going to qualify my safety. That's what's going to really get me out of the situation that I am. And I'm not saying that you know, because most people think that you're supposed to kick the guy inside, you do the back kick and all this. You know, I ain't got to do nothing to this guy behind me. This is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, and I get that. Are you finished? Because I need to go on, okay? I get that. You said
nothing
five times. I get it. You don't need to do nothing, and I need to just get some other opinions in here, just like when I asked Sensei Coleman to come in on your opinion. I'm going to see if they can come in on, because this is a discussion show. This is not everybody. And you say that you don't need to concern yourself with anybody else in a multiple attack. And that's a matter of opinion. You can't make us believe that. You can just say that, and then that's the end of that. But you ain't going to beat me up and make me believe that, because I got an opinion on that, too.
No, all I'm saying is, I'm getting out of here.
Gentlemen, I want to bring in somebody else.
Yeah, okay. Well, show here, but go ahead, bring somebody else in here.
I heard that.
We have Shihan Zahalia.
Hey.
Ah, us. Arad.
Hi. Hi, Zahari. How are you?
I'm blessed. It's good to have you on the show again. We're about to go to break, but maybe I can get you in here before we go to break real quick, and you can hang out with us. Our subject matter here today is, you know, how do you prepare yourself for a multiple attack, or how do you train for one, or do you train at all for one?
Well, what I have been taught and what I have created through my own life experiences is that especially when I'm with my cubs, if something goes down, I do have code names for my kids. And when I give them that look, they know my face and I need to back up. You know what I mean? Or something might be happening. At the same time, when I'm with my husband and he, you know, like, we're opposite to tracks. Like, I'm the firecracker out the couple. So when my husband can see me go off, he'll know to come right next with me, and I know he'll have my back. Now, for personal experience, I've been by myself, and I've had cats come to me thinking they can do some kind of multiple attraction towards me, if you will. And it wasn't going down. But the one thing that I know that I never, ever stop doing is that I never stop giving up. We have to go through, that's my mindset, is to never get up, give up. I'm going to keep moving as Farnucus already does naturally. I'm not going to stop doing that. I'm going to tell myself, hold on a second, baby, that I am going to go home and get out of this situation by the best way possible. Not saying I'm not going to take a lick or three. Not saying I'm not going to get cut. You know, if in a spot that I'm still going to be facing, I'm going to keep going. The only time that I know that I'm going to stop is when I stop breathing.
But, you know, and that's great. I'm glad you started out with something that you had mentioned to me on the other show. I mean, that was cold words for your kids and others around you. Loved ones know that. Prepare them for combat as well because, you know, we want to watch our back and watch their back as well. So I thank you for bringing that into the conversation as well. But I just want to see if we can get you in here before we go to break and make comment towards Soke Off statement. And I'm not sure if he was on the line when he started to his point of view as to he's concerned about the person in front of him. And he used the word only several times in his description. Now, I was with him when he started saying mow the person down, and Sensei Coleman said make that statement and make a dramatic statement. I was with that until he started saying the word only. And, you know, it's sort of like, it put me at bay there for a second because I just said it was a multiple attack, and I don't think that you should be exclusive to anybody in this attack. Your opinion?
I agree with you. I don't think that you should be exclusive. At the same time, I need to know what's happening everywhere. When you are doing the Sanukis, we are taught to watch our back and look around and have that – and have – excuse me, guys. No. To have that –
Did we lose
stopped
him?
Off. Yes, we
okay.
did.
Okay, well, maybe she'll call back and we get her back in after break. But I think that she had made a point, and that watching your back, and as I believe it was you said earlier, perhaps since Coleman has said, you don't stop and look at your handiwork. You know,
no.
We're not going to just like stop to do whatever and look at what's going on. I'm actually looking at the other opponent while I'm still attacking one. Simultaneously, and that simultaneous type of fighting is, to me, the elements of winning. And when we come back from break, we talk a little bit about those things that we should be doing about creating witnesses, identifying people, and preparing for the after effect, too, of a multiple attack. I just want to keep it as real as possible, gentlemen, on here and sister, in the sense that I'm not thinking – and I think Sister Sahelia mentioned it, and she segued on that. She says that, you know, she ain't saying that she ain't going to come out of this unscathed, but she's going to survive this. And if we train for survival like that, and if we train in our schools and understanding in a knife fight, you know, you may get cut, but it's about surviving, and it's about maybe not getting cut on a vital. And I'm not saying you should accept being hit or anything like that. By no means am I saying that. I'm just trying to be real here. And if you can't see what's behind you, you can't time when it's coming. And if three guys are swinging an instrument at your head at the same time, even standing in front of you, you can believe it's like the Kung Fu movies if you want, where he just blocks all of them spears at one time. Come on. We're talking about some real stuff here. And, you know, I've been training a couple of years here now, and I like to think I'm nice at what I do, but, you know, I like to be realistic at the same time. I agree with you. Somebody's going to pay, and somebody's going to pay hard. I agree with you on that one. I put my dime in on that. But I also understand that I have to be able to survive this thing, and I can't be exclusive to any one person or any one thing that's going on here if survival is really my mission. Again, 646-716-6825. Hanshi, take us to break, and then we'll come back with our guests and if they're still holding on. And see what you can do about putting a chain on Soke Austin, because I, you know, I don't know who he think he is, but that's my brother. But he just gonna tear me up when he get a chance. So. But anyway, again, family, thanks for calling and being a part of what we do here. Hanshi, take us to break.
Yes, sir.
My name is Moses Powell. I've been studying jiu-jitsu for the last 20 years. I'm the master for Render Visitation. And at this particular time, I'm a senior master in the art of jiu-jitsu te and jiu-jitsu ryu.
.radio.net presents to you some of the most deadly jiu-jitsu masters in the world. Trained in the vicious urban inner-city street combat system of Sanuka's Ryu Jiu-Jitsu, this art was created by the legendary Dr. Moses Powell, the father of American contemporary jiu-jitsu and the greatest martial artist of the 20th century. This network brings together 7 radio shows 6 nights a week, starting with Monday nights at 9 p.m. Fitness and wellness guru Maya Detrena. Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Each One Teach One. With the Pia Master himself, Grandmaster Urban Muhammad, and his protege, Professor Terence Hale. Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Modern Combat Masters, hosted by the inheritor of GM Billy Davis Jiu-Jitsu, guru of his own Filipino system, and Sanuka's master, Grandmaster Daryl Sargent, and his co-host, Sifu Rosita De Jesus. Thursday nights at 9 p.m. is Professor Tom Curry's radio talk show. A Kenpo master and professor of Sanuka's Ryu, 20 years law enforcement, senior tactical training instructor for intelligence retired, and author of the official Sanuka's Ryu Jiu-Jitsu testing and training curriculum. Friday nights at 8 p.m. is Making the Connection, hosted by the president of DocRadio.net, grandmaster in the art of Sanuka's Ryu and Soke of Kuroshi Kaikan Martial Arts System, and president of the family of Sanuka's organization, Soke Haisan Kalik, and his co-host, Shihan Farouk Gibbs. Saturday at 5 p.m. is Kids Kick Keeping It in Control, hosted by Shodan Samantha Mo Hayasa Namsaran. And the Sanuka's Bloodline Brotherhood will be aired once a month on one of the 6 shows hosted by Fukan Shabazz. All of these shows can be linked to online by typing in docradio.net or listening live at the scheduled time by dialing 646-716-6825. DocRadio.net is also proud to present DocMagazine.net, the world's largest martial art magazine dedicated to Dr. Moses Powell, Sanuka's Ryu Eye-to-Eye Jiu-Jitsu, Urban Tactical Street Self-Defense, and Streetology. Please join our Facebook group by typing in docradio.net. And follow us on Twitter by typing docradio.net. Thank you for your support. And in the words of Doc, eye to eye, heart to heart, to the wall and back, us.
646-716-6825. That's our number to call in. Our show today is about, I guess, what can be considered a controversial subject, because everyone would have to deal with this in a way that creates survival for them. You know, your way may be different. And as Soke Austin said earlier, and I apologize for that, because I drew a scenario. You can make many, many, many different scenarios like this. In some situations, your back is to the wall. As Sensei Eric called in and said, when he goes to clubs and stuff, it's an open space, and, you know, things like that. There's a difference in being jumped, and there's a difference in being a multiple attack that didn't start out as a multiple attack. So there's a thousand different variations in which you can look at this situation. But I would like to think that we are addressing a mindset here today. Sister Zahelia called in a little bit earlier, and she talked about a mindset that she creates for her children and her family. And she says, she being the spicy one in the family, you know, she's one that probably wanted to set it off. So we have to kind of like know what kind of characteristics that we have, the people around us have, and almost to a certain degree, I won't go too far on this because I don't want you to misinterpret what I'm saying, but almost be mind readers of our assailants. And what I mean by that is to sort of create the focus or the thing that we want them to focus on and then change the focus. Would you agree, Haji?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, that way we can sort of bring ourselves into a control of a situation to a certain degree. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Oh, well,
Haji, let's see if who else we got in the back office that we can bring through.
Yes, we have Shehan Walter Evans on.
Oh, it's us.
Oh, good evening.
Professor, how are you, sir?
Hansi.
Sensei
is still on the line. Greetings.
Yes. They're still.
Okay, yeah. Very interesting, but sad fact of life in the urban or country setting on multiple tacks. I'm gonna talk not by scenario, but a little bit about experience. I'm gonna give you a couple of experiences where I was attacked, and it could be set up as a scenario for anybody.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, touch point. A lot of you guys had touch points, and the sister touching points, and very important points. And I'm gonna try to touch a little bit on each one of them. Hassan had mentioned about watching your back. That is very important because of altercation I've had in the street. You know, it's of course you want to mow or go at the biggest person that's in front of you. That's to distract them and let them know that you want to, that you're going to take this fight as far as it's going to go, you know, all the way. But at the same time, watch your back. You have to watch your back. You make a few strikes, you make a few moves, and you watch your back, your sides, your whole peripheral vision. Because in one of my scenarios, the person in back was scared of me, and I was moving aggressively towards the front when he threw the knife at me, you know. It didn't stick, thank God, but I felt it. And so that turned my attention to him, but he wasn't no real threat, so I just dealt with a few others on the side. You had touched base about the MMA training. And, of course, we know that's not going to work against multiple tactics. That's five people, you know. You're not going to ground fight five people. So the stand-up game, I think, is your best chance of surviving with your kicking and punching ability and keeping your focus. And one of the things I came up in the dojo with hearing from Doc and Little John mostly was Bushido Warrior. That's that mindset you get in the dojo. So you can morph or flip right into that mindset when those attacks jump off, you know, where you'll carry your attack right back to the attackers. And you also had mentioned survey the area. And that's also something that I've done because, you know, it's a natural reaction if you study in Bushido, that warrior-type training in your dojo, and not just the kick a punch and a kata kind of thing. Realistically, you have five, six people, maybe just four, and maybe bigger than you, maybe weapons. You want to kind of drag that confrontation from the sidewalk to the middle of the street. Are you with me? Bringing it to the
middle. Sir. Yes, sir. All right, so I appreciate. Go ahead, brother. I just want you to finish your comment because we had a couple more people we want to bring on the line. But I agree with every point you're making, and that the ideology of this whole thing is, and I'm going to keep taking you brothers and sisters back to that, is that there's some novice people on the line that, and I don't say this to be offensive, but are definitely afraid of one assailant, much less eight of them. And I just said that, you know, we all are susceptible to a multiple attack just as easy as we are to a single attack. But like a lot of things that when it comes down to survival, we don't even know how we got there. You know, we talk about the this was a scenario that happened when I was growing up, and I used to read about it all the time. About the, I think they even call it a name, like the mother syndrome, where a mother seen her child trapped up under a car, and she was able to actually physically lift this car off of her child. Now, had you asked her to pick that car up at any other time, she looked at you like you was a damn fool. Or even if she had tried to do it any other time. But because she was in what she felt was a survival mode for her child, she was able to move that car off of her child. So the same thing what you're saying there, Professor, I agree with you. The warrior's eye, the tiger, the Bushido code, whatever you want to name it, is it's going to be that thing that's going to click in. And when that click-in thing, as some people refer to it as fight or flight, and we got all kinds of names for it, but how do we harness that, put a saddle on it, and use it for our own purposes? And that's kind of like what I'm talking about. We know it's there. If you're a human being, then you have a survival mode in you. But what's going to make you freeze and what's going to make you move? And I think if we can share that with our audience, then, because as you just said, those are personal situations that happen with you, and you're here to tell a story because you were able to use these things. So if you can just share with maybe our audience some of those things that made you or gave you the ability to be here with us to tell this story here today, because this is some things that perhaps we hope that everyone on this line never, ever has to face a multiple situation. But it, as you just said, it's very ugly. Now, one person on this line will agree that it's a pretty thing. It's ugly. And I mean ugly as in if you've never seen your own blood, if you've never seen someone else's blood, if you never heard nobody scream from a bone that you broke, all of this stuff is very, very important inside of combat. And unless you take yourself to that state of mind and to that level, or as Dr. Powell would say, to that level of understanding, you lost already. That's my point. 646-716-6825. We got a couple more minutes to the show. Let's open up the lines and see if we can get everybody back in here and, of course, conversation with everybody, Hanshi. And so I asked a couple of questions that anybody can chime in on.
Yes, we have Sister Shehan Saheli is back.
Okay.
Everybody,
let's open
the mic.
And everyone, Sensei Coleman's still on the line?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and also Soke Austin on the line?
Yes, sir.
Osh, yeah.
And as well as Professor Walters on the line?
Yes, sir.
Okay, brothers and sisters, you can all greet yourselves by saying us, and we're letting everyone know that you're all right there.
Osh.
Okay. I thank you all for being a part of this conversation. If it gets too much loud, wherever you're at with your background noise, if you can just mute yourself to help keep the line clear, and then maybe just chime in whenever you're ready to make a statement, you know, that'll help us keep the line open to everybody. And again, thank you for chiming in on this subject. I'm just going to take it a little bit deeper in the direction that wound up being a little pet peeve for me. It was a comment that Soke Austin made when he said that he was only concerned about that person that was in front of them. Does anybody else concur to that that formula and as to why you would be concerned with just that person? Okay, so
I
someone
think
does.
Be...
Yes, sir.
Well, I think you have to, you know, like, you know, with part of our training and part of the training from I received from Hernandez is that your mindset, usually the way I build a scenario is, in my mind, is you always have that one alpha dog, that one alpha that's going to basically say he's going to be the guy that wants to get up in your face. And, yeah, you're surrounded. It's always that, and there's that weaker one behind you that wants to throw in that quick jab or stab you or whatever the case may be because he's the most scared. So my sentiment is that the first person that approaches you, if you're able to see that person coming, you have to take that person out first. Now, you have to take that person out, not in the sense of just concentrate on him and beat him down or whatever the case may be. You're going to have to do, that's when your techniques come into play, where you have to take that person out very quickly. Do something very quickly and turn. You have to take that, if you 3 seconds, turn around and then go after somebody else. Because they're going to be at that point, they're going to turn down on you.
Oh. But I understand, but what I was just, and now I just want to add my opinion. Hold on 1 second, please. Yes, I just wanted to make a point that, and this is my opinion. When you guys keep saying take him out or assess that person, just just see if you can kind of like concur with me on this just for a second here.
Sure.
If a couple of people here and this is one guy, as you just say this in front of me, my mindset tells me he's looking for the fight. He's ready for whatever I got that I'm going to throw at him. At least he think he's ready. But for me to motion at that one and then take the one out to the left of me and bust him up because that's the element of surprise, he didn't think I was going to hit him. And while that one in front of me sees me bust the one in the mouth to the left, then I can go back because I got him looking like, no, he didn't bust him in the mouth. So, but my point is, since there's no defense against the element of surprise, why am I not using the element of surprise? If I know that's going to be a fact, as a warrior, why am I not using that in my advantage? Why am I addressing this guy in front of me who has set himself in front of me, who knows that I can't get out unless I go through him, and why am I, you know, assessing him with that kind of mono thing when I need to be using things to my advantage? And that's just my point here. Now, I agree with you with assessing that person.
I agree with you on that. My only thing is the element surprise for me is the common thing I've always learned, and I've been to several seminars, my instructor, I've seen things in the street. The person who's mouthing off to you is expecting you to throw that punch. They're bad enough where they say, I know he's going to throw that punch. My scenario is, if you're going to do something to that individual, do something that he doesn't expect. Whether it's a quick shoot them to the throat, something that's out of the norm in that fashion. I have no problem playing the punk role. Listen, I don't want no problems. And all of a sudden, before you blink of an eye, I'm putting my thumb in his eye. I'm talking about doing something to that ration in a sense to throw them off. Wait a minute. This guy just shot him in the throat. Either he knows something or the whole dynamic just changed now.
I like to interject anybody else here. Yes, sir. This is Hashi Saleem. Now, given the scenario, the element of surprise, my opinion only, the man that's standing off to the side or in back of me, I'm going to take him out. That's one I don't have to worry about, the person in back of me. Now I'm going to deal with what's on the side and in the front of me. And once they see, psychologically, when you do damage like that we're talking about, there's a second thought. You become a different person. My opinion only.
Sister Zahel, your input.
I'm just going to really just speak on my personal experiences because they have been surprises. From my vision, when cats was coming at me, it wasn't a surprise trip. You know, and one thing that I know that I've learned within myself and I try to tell my students is that your body is naturally going to do that surprise response. You're going to naturally go, like, what is that? Your body's going to naturally do that. The difference is from somebody who's trained and who's not trained is how long is that reaction going to take before you take off and defend yourself.
Yes.
So I always felt that you're going to do what you do naturally, but the difference between somebody who's trained and who's not is how long is that reaction going to take. So like the average woman or man could be outside and they get surprised and like, what are you know, and like bug out. Or the person who is trained is going to feel that surprise and do a quick breath like, and then get to work. You know what I'm saying? So
I definitely understand what you're saying. What I'm saying is I'm agreeing with you in the sense that if you're going to create the surprise, then you shouldn't be surprised by what you created. And that's the point that I'm making. I don't tend to think that people are really assessing themselves. So, you know, as we said before, we don't want to stand around and assess our own work. We don't want to get to the point where we're looking at this thing as if it's going to be this straight situation. Thank you. But this straight situation is going to always be this way or that way. But what I think when I'm assessing myself to here and I'm getting to this, and I'm just going to let you guys just talk it out from this point on, is that I really am saying that I believe that it's more tactic than it is technique. And I believe when you're talking about a multiple situation, it is how you tactfully put yourself in position. And as the example that I used earlier is with an Aikido player, he's using in his Ramdori motion and moving around and just not being there, he's tactically moving. He's not really trying to assess who he's going to strike or whatever. He's making these people overcommit to grab at him, to punching him. He's just not there. He's running them into each other. He's doing all kinds of things. And at any point, he's able to pick them out and pot shot them. You know, I teach in the after-school programs a lot here, and a lot of these kids are very, very novice to any type of self-defense, and they constantly ask you the proverbial question, Soke, how many people can you beat? You know, Soke, if there's 500 people in this room, could you beat them all? Soke, could you beat Bruce Lee? You know, Soke, because, you know, they have this way of thinking that if a person can do this, then he must be greater than that. So when they ask me the question, if there's 25 people in the room, Soke, could you beat them? And I tell them, they ask me, what would I do? And I tell them I would run through the door. And so they all start laughing. And then I would say, well, I feel that I'm skillful enough that all 25 people can't get through the door at one time, and as they come through, I can pick them off. So my point in saying is my tactic is what won the technique. If I stood in a room of 25 people with them all surrounding me, honestly, no, I don't believe I have the same kind of odds in my favor than if I ran through the door and I picked them off one at a time. So I think that when we talk about multiple situations, I believe that your tactic has to kick in now above your technique, and then your technique can easily apply itself accordingly to how you set the people up for your attack. That's just my opinion. Is there anybody else that we have on there that didn't chime in on? Yes, sir.
Who's this?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I spoke already.
Okay, Austin.
Yes.
Yes, let's hear from you.
I'm just going to reiterate, okay? Because you gave Sokyasan gave a scenario. You know, if you are attacked and you are in the circle, you know, and you're the one in the circle and you're surrounded, okay? Now, how would you, what would be your major concern is to get out of that circle. You cannot see the one behind you. You cannot, you can see the ones peripherally on the side of you. Your major concern is to get the guy that's standing in front of you. I don't understand. You're not trying to make a movie here. You're trying to save your life. You know what Peter Urban said one time? He said, you know what? There's no shame in running when you can run out of a fight. It's just that when you know the martial arts, you learn to run with dignity. You understand? But that's what I'm saying. Get that son of a gun that's in front of you. Mow him down. I'm not concerned about it because once I get him out of my way, then I can get out of there. I'm going to run.
Okay.
I'm going to get out of there. I'm going to get out of there. I'm not trying to make no movie. Stop the mess. Stop the mess. I'm not there to make a movie. I'm there to save my life.
I
want you to understand. We respect your opinion, and that's kind of like all it is on this show. It's an opinion. I don't tend to think that everybody has to take that because it may save your life, but it may not save someone else's. So that's all we're talking about. Well, that's what I'm saying is that that's just your opinion, and I don't believe it is making a movie if I'm trying to make sure that I can stop the assaults again. And I've been in real-life situations, and I've seen them. And it doesn't take that. You don't have to go into a big scenario to try to see that. I mean, they got them all over the place to show you how people cannot watch their backs. And you can believe all that you want that you can get out of that room, but if they want to get you, you're going to have a little bit more than the tactic of paying attention to only one person. Just like that was that your opinion, that's mine. And that's all I'm really saying is that I hear you with the mow down effect, and I hear you with that, and I don't really, this is my opinion, I don't think it's making a movie if I'm concerned about others other than that, because they're not going to stop just because I ran. You know, they're going to come after me. Now I got them on my back. And there's not too many martial arts that really advocate giving your back to an opponent, whether it's on the ground or whether it's standing up. And we say that all the time, watch your back, because we, even in Sanukis, understand, as powerful as it is, we need to make sure that we watch our back. So I'm not advocating turning my back on no one and thinking that they're not going to come up behind me. And I believe that's just my opinion on that. So we only got like a couple more minutes to the show, and well, really, it's almost a half an hour. I want to thank everybody for coming in thus far. We talked about a couple of things here: mindset, not looking at your handiwork. You know, I have an expression that I always use when I say chance favors the prepared mind. And again, I like to look at things conceptually more than I do just in the technique. And what I mean by that is that if my mind is prepared, and we talked about that, Sensei Coleman talked about it earlier as well, is that we constantly, we call it paranoia in the beginning, but we're preparing our minds on a constant basis for something that we hope that will never come. But if we're prepared for it, then chance favors us because we are prepared for it. And so when this happenstance happens that a multiple attack came, and we hope and pray that it never happens to anybody on this line, is that we have to be realistic. The wolves travel in packs. People don't fight people barehanded anymore. And if they have the position to assault you with a weapon to make their job easier, they definitely will. Because to them, the crime is the same, whether they hit you with a pipe or whether they hit you with a bottle or whether they hit you with anything. And so as Sensei Coleman said, you know, having that beer bottle at hand or whatever, you know, I don't know beer bottles that crack, especially when you hit somebody with the base of it first. You get hit in the head with a beer bottle, you know all the – you won't even remember how to spell karate after getting hit like that. So, you know, let's be realistic about being attacked. And that's kind of like all I'm saying. You know, you can say, well, if a dog attacked me, I do this and I do that. But if the dog really gets a hold of you, you got a whole bunch of stuff you got to contend with. And yes, the point I'm making here is that in this multiple attack, there's a good chance, a very good chance, that somebody connected with you. All right? And that's all I'm saying. And to me, that's making a movie. If you think that you're going to be in a multiple attack and you're not going to get touched. All right? So I'm just saying it's about survival now. And what kind of mindset do I have about getting touched? When somebody throw a bottle at me, do I go run after the person through the bottle? Or do I – what's the mindset do I have? When somebody grabs me from one side and I feel the sharp pain in my back, do I pay attention to that because I got stabbed in the back? Or do I go in the opposite direction? Do I try to control that knife? These are all things to try, that you have to contend with inside of a knife fight or inside of a multiple attack. And as we said earlier, it's not pretty. So, again, does anybody have anything else they want to or add to the statement? Professor Walter, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to see if we can just keep the conversation going. I think you added some real important parts to the conversation. Did you have any further comments you wanted to make?
No. I'm just listening in. Like you said, these scenarios are never the same. So there's no one set way that you could think about going into the survival mode. Could be, you know, several different scenarios. I do agree with taking out the biggest person in front of you. I mean, that's a natural instinct to want to do a front kick, flying front kick. Once you knock out that bigger person, you kind of take the weight from some of the other hanger-ons that figured they could make an easy picking of you. Your back is always important. We train like that in the dojo. We have a scenario set up in the dojo when we train with it's five people, and we put one in a circle in the middle. So I don't know how many other martial arts train like that, but, you know, I think all of us on this line have trained some similar technique fighting multiple attacks.
Okay, let me ask you this, Professor, and that's a great scenario that you brought up because that is true. We train like that. But even in that clinical environment where we put one person in the middle with five people, is there ever a time that person in that clinical environment, and this is friendly fire now, is there ever a time when that person in the middle goes unscathed, that he's not touched at all?
I don't think so, because you're dealing with
in your personal experience, when this has happened in your school and that scenario is being taught and we're running through that routine and that type of drilling and training, is there ever a time where whoever's in that middle before that exercise is over, has gone untouched. Nobody has touched him. Is there ever a time?
Yes.
Oh, who said yes?
I did, Professor Walter.
Okay, so you practiced that drill, and before you was out and they switched off to the next partner, you came out unscathed and nobody touched you.
Not me. There was a reason why I was saying that. My instructor, well, we all got in that circle, and we all got touched because we're skilled and we're training in this kind of environment.
But that was my point, though, Professor. I was just trying to make the point that there's never a time when you're in that circle where you don't get touched, including the instructor. Am I correct?
Well, yeah. Yes, that's
okay.
True.
But my point in saying that is that we understand that when we get in there that you're going to get touched. Now, it doesn't mean that we went down because we got touched. It doesn't mean that we lost because we got touched, but we got touched. Am I correct?
We all got touched, and that's the purpose of the training.
Thank you. And then the purpose of the training is to teach you that, and if you're going to get touched in that clinical environment, it's very likely that you're going to get touched outside as well, and to prepare yourself for being touched. That's the only point that I'm making. I'm just trying to get this thing out, or somebody make it more clear to me why I should only be paying attention to one person, and I don't understand that. So my point is, if we train that way in a school, that we can get touched and that we can be able to deal with the touch and keep on moving to survive the attack, then that's the whole purpose in there, is to teach you that you can get touched. But not to feel that you, just because you took one guy out, that everybody should stop. I mean, that's good. That's a good day if that happens. But I'm not anticipating that happening. You know, I'm not fighting like, you know, this guy's going to drop and everybody's going to stop. This is not like the old Westerns where you kill the chief and the Indians turn around and go home. I mean, I don't know. Not in Bronzeville. I'm just saying, you know. Anyway, 646-716-6825. Hanshi, you go deal with this. I gotta take my medication, brother.
Hanshi,
you had a good question as well, panel?
Well, yes. I see, it's not so much a question, because everybody that's on our panel knows this, that a conflict is fluid. It's fluid. We can sit up there and say, well, I'm going to pull this and I'm going to – it ain't going to happen like that. You know, it's just not. You know, Sokey Austin talking about hitting the first guy and then running over him. Okay, I'm in an elevator in the project. Where am I running? Where am I running, man? I'm in a little tight bodega in New York.
But Hanshi, in respect to Sokey Austin, you know, just to give him fair play on this, I did create a scenario where he was surrounded. And so I don't want to change it and say, well, now we're in an elevator. We were surrounded. And his point was that he's going to take the guy out straight in front of him. I respect that. That's his opinion. And I respect anybody's opinion that's coming on here telling me the way they would do it. All I'm just saying is that when I offer you to explain why you would do that over this, is to just give me what your opinion is, but don't try to change my mind, because you know, I wouldn't necessarily do that.
Yes,
and you may not necessarily do what I do. But as our listeners listen in, they perhaps take tidbits out of what each and every one of us will do. Because, again, the fight is encrypted, and we do need as many elements as possible to try to deal with the situation. I am in favor of changing the whole scenario. As I said before, you know, make the lights go out, throw some salt in people's face, run a chair into somebody, throw over my shoulder, somebody behind me, and attack them. You know, I'm in favor of that type of fighting because people are not focused on what their intentions were. And when I can change your focus, I can change the result. That's just my opinion. And
I agree with that.
And much like it is in Sanukas, we cause multiple pain. You know, some people call it the overkill, but, you know, we don't call it that. We just inflict as much pain because we know that the brain is a computer. And when it's too much pain, it shuts the whole body down. I don't have to shut it down. the whole body shuts down because it's like, we can't take all this abuse. We'll be back next Tuesday or something. You know what I'm saying? So, but if, as martial artists, if we know and understand that, we understand the human anatomy and we understand pain tolerance and stuff that some people can take a little bit more than others, we got to go to the source. And the source is the brain. We got to convince the brain to shut down, shut that body down. And so when, as Sensei Coleman said, when I hit you in the throat, then I circle to the left and hit you in the temple and then bust that kneecap and come around and bust your eardrums, that's too much pain going on up in here. And so your body is like, yo, I don't know who this is and how many of them is attacking us, but y'all need to leave them alone. You see, and when that happens, the fight changes. That's all my point I'm making. I wouldn't consider that making a movie. I just consider that being real about causing pain. I know it hurts, and so I'm going to give you what I know. I know what pain, and I'm going to give you pain. I think that's why we as instructors, we teach like that. We teach through pain. We want you to feel it so you understand it and so you know how to apply it. It's as simple as that. But if you ain't never felt pain, how are you going to inflict pain?
That's
just my opinion.
That's right.
646-716-6825. We got a very good selection of martial artists here on the line coming in from all over. Thank you, Sister Sahel. You're all coming and calling in all the way from the West Coast, as well as Professor Walter calling in from Florida, and Soke Austin calling in from over here next door trying to rack my nerves. But anyway.
I think he's walking over to your studio.
Yeah, right. He's probably walking all the way over here now at the door, coming to start some more trouble. But also Sensei Coleman out of Queens doing a great job over there with the youth. I'm going to not end with this, but I'm going to put this question in the scenario, just flip the script a little bit. And let's talk about children. Let's talk about them. How do we teach them to prepare for a multiple attack? Anybody want to chime in on that?
Yes,
sir. Sheehan
Evans, you go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I don't want to put that in your mouth, Professor, but is there any difference in that? Do we teach them any differently than we would, you know, an adult?
I don't think so, and I think you know my answer to that. I'll train the youth the same way because the strategies are the same. You know, all of us had a lot of us had good strategies tonight on this radio talk show, and they all work in different scenarios, you know. So if they work, let's continue to teach them and use them if it helps us survive. And so why not pass it down to the youth, whether it's female or male, but this is the way how to survive. Go into your eye of the tiger, your survival, your bushido, your survival mode, and put them in a circle or put them in a situation where they have to fight multiple attackers so they'll get used to it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Us. Anybody else?
From my point of view, I agree wholeheartedly with a statement that Sheehan Evans put forth. If you teach them early to pay attention, as I taught my children, to pay attention to their surroundings. I'll say something real fast. My son years ago, maybe he was about 11, got into a fight in the playground, and he vanquished his cat, and then he started chasing again. The first thing I did as I was watching is stop him. You don't go into his block. You did what you had to do, you come home. So I taught him then, you know, basically that once you have done what you've done, it's time to come home. You don't pursue it. All right, you have them on the run. But basically teaching these children that they have to be aware. And one thing that I'm just going to put this out there, one thing that really gets me is the way people, not just children, do not pay attention these days with these cell phones and earplugs. That really, really bugs me. They're definitely not aware of their surroundings. And I just look at them and say, boy, if I was an attacker, I could do this, I could do this, and I could do that. And you wouldn't even realize what was happening. That's my statement.
I think you both just concurred what I was saying all along, that that this tactic that is universal. It's not the technique because, you know, if we're telling a person, a child to hit an adult in the same place we tell an adult to hit an adult, sometimes they may not have the force or the strength to be able to drop an adult, and their strike may not be as accurate. So that would be the technique of what we're doing. But the strategy of it, as you just both concurred, is universal. You know, the strategies are the same whether it's an adult or a child. And the reason why I asked that question is because I was trying to find a common denominator. When we talk about these multiple attacks being encrypted and they can come in any kind of way, any time or whatever, and many of them are planned. In other words, they didn't just decide to form a gang to attack you. This was planned and tactfully done. You know, they was tracking one time some chimpanzees in the jungle and how they set their prey up and how they throw rocks up ahead to be able to create distraction and make the prey run to the left or the right into the trap that they set. And it was showing how, again, when gangs work together, they work on a one-mind concept. And it's not that they know each other or they've been training or whatever, but they tend to just get this synergy about the attack. And when that happens, you pretty much are in trouble because the whole idea is to make you confused where you're not quite sure what you're going to do. So, you know, I concur with Soke Austin with the, okay, my mindset is to take this guy out. Okay, that's good because you got a mindset there, and this is what you want to do, and you feel that that's what's going to be the thing of survival. My only opposition with him or question with him was the word only. And I don't tend to think you can use the word only in a multiple situation. And so, again, if, like Professor Walter said, if that's what gets you home, then I suggest you, by all means, you use that and you keep using that. I always have a little cliche that I tell my students about Street Fighter, that if a Street Fighter has been knocking guys out with a right cross for the last 15 years, today you getting a right cross because this guy's not going to change his plan, his game plan. You have to have a mindset, and a mindset is not the same thing as having a sort of a game plan, so to speak. You know, to quote Mike Tyson, he said everybody's got a plan until they get hit. And when you get hit, it's a whole other thing. And so we got to kind of understand that, too, that everything will change in this scenario. I have to be ready for the change. But again, to remind, to use Mike Tyson as a metaphor, if anybody can remember the fight that when he got knocked down and his mouthpiece was out of his mouth, all he knew that he was supposed to be up on his feet. And later on, in later interviews, he said that he didn't even realize he was knocked down because as a fighter, he know he's supposed to be on his feet fighting. So he was on the mat searching for his mouthpiece to put his mouthpiece back on because as far as his body is concerned, I'm supposed to be standing and fighting. So he was actually knocked out on his feet and didn't realize it, but his body went into the second nature of survival. So, again, okay. I tend to think that that's what I'm talking about here as far as a martial artist knowing how to create and train his self to operate on a second instinct, which perhaps he doesn't even know what he's going to do. You know, to quote a great master, Thomas LaPuppet, who we grew up under, he once said to me, as we were training and not far from him in the school, he said, if you can tell me everything that you're going to do in a fight and know exactly where you're going to hit somebody and what's going to happen, this, that, and another, he said, you wasn't in no real fight. And, you know, I concur with him in that, is that, you know, after a while, you kind of amazed at what you do to the assailant yourself because you were not in the frame of mind of trying to remember what you're going to do. So, again, I brought the subject to the panel about multiple attacks is because I don't tend to think we get any more realer than that when we talk about martial art in the self-defense form. There have been many subjects on it. If you go to YouTube, you'll see a whole bunch of people on there claiming that they're teaching you how to prepare against a multiple attack. But I'm not quite sure if there is a game plan more than it should be a mindset. Celine, did you have anybody else in the back office that wanted to join us on this conversation?
Yes, she has the Helios back.
Okay, great. Okay, so did you have anything more that you wanted to add to this conversation? Because we pretty much, I don't want to say explored it for the most part, But, again, I didn't want to be downtrodden on anybody's method. But we started out by saying we really would like to speak to the mindset of the layperson. You know, when we wrote up the post, we said, how do you train for a multiple attack? But better yet, or do you train at all? Or is there really a need for it, since we don't know what's going to happen in it anyway? Your comment.
Like I was saying before, for personal experiences is what the reaction is going to be. You never want anything to happen to you, whether it is multiple, whether it's one-on-one or with an animal, a dog, or whatever. But just the reaction, how long is it going to take you to react to the situation? I and the other students do train for multiple attacks. Pops always told us to be ready for whatever. And from personal experiences, my response to what has been going on has been quicker than the average woman or, you know, in the situation that was being dealt in my hand. Now, when you become a martial artist and you train and you have different scenarios and you have different techniques and you do everything, but at the end of the day, it's like, are you a dojo fighter or are you a survivor? And for me, my opinion for me and myself is that I am a survivor because I have been through these situations, and I have been able to go home, you know. And some people, you know, don't get that experience, which is a good thing because you don't want things coming at you left and right sideways. But when some things do come your way, how do you handle it? You know, it's like I've been hearing things, and people have a lot of saying, well, I would do this and I would do that, and I don't know what I would do. I just know that I would survive. Because you don't know.
Right.
You're going to do what you're going to do, what's available. I've always been saying, I'm going to do what's available. I'm not going to do this and that and yada, yada. I'm going to do what's available. And, yeah, I might get cut. I might get socked in the neck. I might get choked, you know, but I'm just going to keep moving. I just know that I'm never going to give up. I'm never going to give up. That's my mindset. Don't give up. Get your shit together and don't get, excuse me. But that's always been my mindset because once my heart, it's once my heart fails, once my mind fails, then I'm done.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I think that concurs to what I was saying about mindset. So much in her description of it until, you know, she got a little excited, almost like she was in battle right now, you know, because you start to envision, you know, what's going on around you. You can see this, you know, shell shock, if you might want to call it that or whatever. And if you've ever been in one, you never forget it as long as you live. And when the people that are near and dear to you are training for you this for this, they get very upset when they see you make mistakes and mistakes that can cost you your life, you know, relaxing too soon, putting yourself in a bad position, not creating the opportunities. And I say that because, you know, opportunities need to be created inside of a multiple situation. You just can't hope that they're going to be there. You got to have some kind of manufacturing plant going on there where you're creating opportunities. You know, kicking kneecaps is a good opportunity creator, you know, because pain in the kneecap hurts. And you're going to leave something else open while you're busy grabbing your knee, you know. But it's a whole lot of things that you can do here, as sister said, not really planning for it. And I thank everybody for their comments here thus far because what it does is it adds to it. And, again, in case you guys don't know, I do get I don't call them letters, but emails from people after the show talking about how well the comments here did help them understand a little bit better about what it is that we're talking about here, whatever the subject matter is. So I thank you for that. Hanshi, do you have any more input on your end?
Yes, I would just like to put out there, there's a Japanese term called mushin, no mind. And that means exactly what we were talking about here today, Soke. It's a flowing thing. It's an ongoing thing, like Shihin Zaharia said. It's, you know, you can't tell me I'm going to stand this way and then I'm going to poke this guy. No. It's an ongoing thing, so you have no mind. Your mind is like an empty vessel, and when you're doing your thing, you're doing your thing on a whole nother level, and Your thing is to get home. Your thing is to win the battle, to get home. So if it, like you said, is it taking out a kneecap or hitting somebody in the throat or crushing a sternum, whatever you have to do to get home. You see, so it's a flowing thing. It's a mushin. It's a no mind. You know, you don't. It's no preconceived, you know, cookie cutter technique that I could tell anybody. Well, you're on the subway and this guy does this. You go, no. Situational awareness. If you don't have to be in the situation, get yourself out of it. And
but that's a good title as well, situational awareness, and I believe that would be a good thing to put up on your marquee, I guess, if they said, what are you teaching in that school? And I guess that's a pretty category. So I thank you for that comment. But I'm going to ask another quick question here. Is that how much in the combat arts should this be taught? Should this be an extrinsic part of a curriculum, or is it something that may perhaps that we can leave out? Shion Zahelia, what do you think? Do you think if you're teaching a comprehensive self-defense course, you can leave, as we said, situation awareness out of that?
No, no, sir. You have to be available for whatever is going to be possible. Whatever is outside on that blacktop, you better be training inside for it.
Good point. And as we always say, you know, the streets that we walk in and live in are actually our combat fields as well, you know. So even our own living room can turn into a combat zone, and that's real important to understand that these things can change on a dime. You know, it's all kinds of situations we look around we can draw references from. But is Professor Walter still on the line?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Professor Walter, situation awareness, that's sort of the title that we gave it here, but I'm not sure what you call it, but how much of that do you think is important to teach if you were teaching a comprehensive self-defense course, or should it be taught at all?
Oh, I agree. That's very important, and I think it should be mandatory. When I do workshops for the library, I take the novice people right off the street, and we sit down and we have an awareness-type conversation about watching, you know, your back going to your door, just watching your back coming from a school bus, adults workshops, going to your car at night from work. So awareness is very important in any martial arts or any situation. It's very important to be aware. Another way we say it is watch your back at all times.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sensei Coleman's still on the line.
No, sir. He's dropped out.
Okay, and as well, Soke Olsen is here.
No, sir.
Okay. Well, you know, again, brothers and sisters, you know, you've, as I always said, turned the light on. And, you know, everyone's opinion is definitely counted here. Sometimes, you know, I keep saying that over and over again because I can be very adamant about what I feel as well. And I think that's what happened when we're dealing with Alpha Warriors, which is basically the title I've given everybody on this show. You know, we come strong. You know, we bring it hard, and we believe we come with our beliefs. And we come with the beliefs that our teachers teach us, and we reinforce them with what's going on today. And I say that because, you know, the one thing about the Code of Bushido is that even though it was created hundreds of years ago, it's still applicable today because the warriors today can take it and tweak it to what's happening in their everyday lives. And I tend to think the Sanukis pretty much fits into that same category. It never gets old. It never gets outdated. It's always practical because it's based off of simplicity and survival. And those two things are really the key in life. You know, as complicated as things may seem, it always comes down to a basic way that it's done. And when we talk about survival, what else counts if you didn't survive? You know, so you really got to stop and think about that. But we don't really stop too long and think about it in Sanukis because we come in to that mindset almost immediately from day one. You know, that we're not trying to be fancy or win tournaments or whatever. You know, we just always thinking about this thing on a survival mode. And so much like Shion Zahelia said that, you know, I'm going to win, I'm going to win, I'm going to win, is a mantra that's running through our minds all the time, and we're not letting any other thought get in between that. You know, and by winning, we mean surviving. And I tend to think that that's what this whole conversation today, at least from my perspective, was centered around and the point that I was trying to make on this particular radio show, that surviving a multiple attack is really based on your level of comprehension of what it takes to survive. And if you understand that long before the attack comes, I believe that you've already won. So you really need to put yourself in a survival mode. And we did a show similar to that once before, what is a survival mode, and trying to identify that. But multiple attacks, again, nobody's going to send you an invitation to a multiple attack. You know, multiple attack at 3 o'clock, please be there. It's not going to be like that. They're not going to tell you how many people are there. They're not going to tell you what weapons they got. And they're not going to tell you what their intent is. But you best believe it's not going to be a good one. And so you have to create your own outcome. And if you go into it with the mindset of taking out individuals and not, to me, paying attention to the whole scenario, it's impossible for me to think of a multiple attack and not keep the word multiple in mind. Multiple. They're coming different ways. They're coming different people. And, you know, in my situation, again, understanding what's going to happen with me in the fight. And that's a whole other scenario that we didn't address here, but adrenaline rushing through the body, different things that allow me to have tunnel vision, hyperventilation, all kinds of things can actually take me out of the fight and not make me as sharp as I normally would be. And that's, again, understanding the human body. The human body is not designed to just be a peak performance all the time. It gets tired. It gets weary. And the brain will shut off a blood flow to certain parts of the body that it doesn't think that it needs right now to survive. And a lot of times, that's our legs. You know, we hear about that all the time, that our feet get frozen in position. It's like, I can't run. It's because the circulation is not flowing down through your legs anymore. What do you do now? That ain't you. That's your body going into its own protective mode, its own survival mode. But it actually happens against your own plan that you had for survival. Now, I'm going at it from that angle, because I don't tend to think a lot of people understand that your body can not only play tricks on you, it can deceive you. It can make you think one thing when something else is happening. And so you have to be ready for that trick, so to speak. You know, and you see it happen a lot in boxing. The coach is on the side screaming at this guy to do X, Y, Z. He don't hear you, and he don't understand what you're saying because he's in a survival mode now. He's doing everything he needs to do to survive. And I tend to think that if we look at it that way, we have to understand if a person's coming at you, three guys coming at you with a knife, you can scream all day as to what you want that person to do. He's only going to do what it takes to survive. And so you can tell him about all the knives behind him. He's going to go with the thing that's in front of him. So I say that to say, let's not get too tricky about not understanding that our own bodies can work against us if we don't train it. If we train it the right way, it can be prepared for this thing that's going to happen that we don't want to happen. And that's, we don't want no freezing going on inside no multiple situation. Freezing ain't a good thing. All right?
No, sir.
And we want to convince ourselves that, as Professor Walter said earlier and as Sean Zahelia said, we want to get those things going in our dojo. We want to train constantly towards movement. If you train movement, you'll move. If you don't train to move, you won't move. Simple as that. You can't just hope that you're going to be moving. You know, you can't. If you don't train to dance, you don't need to be on train Dancing with the Stars because you ain't going to look good, okay? You need to understand that them people are practicing that. You know, so you ain't going to be good unless you train in the way of survival. And that's my point. Survival is a mindset more than it is a technique. Brothers and sisters, as usual, I just want to end the show by giving you an opportunity to speak on whatever else you got coming up in your areas. I know some of you are doing seminars and got some things coming up. Professor Walter, I know that you're always in preparation for what's going on down in your neck of the woods.
First of all, I want to say thanks for having me, man. I should be trying to call in on the show a little bit more often, man, because I love it. You know, I have a few days off until summer camp start. But
yes,
I do have July at Safety Harbor Library. I do my workshops for adults and families. So I have July and August booked in Safety Harbor, Florida, over there with Brother Salim. family, I believe, resides.
Yes,
and hopefully visit me over there this time at Safety Harbor Library. And upcoming events that I plan to attend is seminars with this Maurice actor, Crump, who's making some noise out here nowadays doing this movie, The Protector. He'll be in New York at Brother Warrington Hudlin's event at the Museum of Moving Images. I plan to do a seminar with him June 28th here in
Yes, sir. And thank you for that information because those are powerful individuals that's moving around in the martial art community amongst us. So keep your eyes and ears open for their movement. And Professor Walter is always at the helm doing some great things down there as well with his children with the FOS as well. So thank you for that, brother.
Thank you.
Sean Zahelia, what anything going on in your neck of the woods?
Us, what we're just still doing out here is training and surviving. The dojo's is still open, just ready for that war.
Okay. I like the way Sister put that, ready for the war. Most of the time, they'll be talking about ready for the party. This sister said ready for the war.
Well, you know, I mean, that's
just
my
That's great. Hanshi Salim, what's going on with you?
I'm stoked. I'm just stoked about tomorrow and Karoshi Kaikan Karate Jiu-Jitsu anniversary, and seeing my martial arts family.
Yes, sir.
That's what's in my life. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's great. I know that Sensei Coleman is now on the line. Is he still with us?
No, sir.
Okay, but I know he did a great event up in Canada, and we're planning to go up there real soon again. It's a great seminary that's offered up there. Brother comes down all the time since LeClaire is just doing some great things in his people. So much respect to him and the efforts of Osensei Robert Hernandez doing some great things up there as well, coming out of Puerto Rico. So if you find yourself
yes,
there, those are some names to remember as well. And as I said, I mentioned earlier, on the 28th of this month now here in New York, we're doing our second event of the Family of Sanukis. We're calling it Sanukis Training Concepts. We'll be held at 392 Blake Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, zip code 11212. You can reach out to me and also my Facebook page as well. We have a presence there where you can check in and just click that you like the event or that you're coming, or maybe you might be coming. But let us know that you hear us when we put these events and stuff out there. So a lot of times these dates bounce off other dates and commitments that we have, but know and understand that you're family whenever you come to an FOS event. With that being said, brothers and sisters, you know, it's always a good show.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
I have one more thing.
Yes, sir.
I just became a grandfather again for the fifth time.
All right. Congratulations, brother.
Yes, right. Yes, I'm building my dojo.
Okay. Congratulations.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations.
Yes, sir.
And tell,
yes, sir.
Tell baby girl Aziz.
Oh, it's a boy.
He's
all boy, 9 pounds, 12 ounces. All boy.
Wow.
Ooh, that's a big baby.
Number up.
We got to
put
the name for him already. We call him Sumo, right?
Tell your daughter. Good job. Tell
yes,
your daughter, good job. Pushing that baby.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. And next Friday, I'm going to be joining the ranks of the seniors in my group, which is Soke Hassan and Soke Austin. I'll be turning 60, which is no big deal. You know what I mean? So it was a big deal when y'all did it, but it ain't no big thing now.
Well, happy pre-birthday, brother, and hopefully we see you by then, you know, keep you strong up with the rest of us out here. So with that being said, family, thank you again for coming on the call. My prayers and salams with everyone. Until next time, may your good be better. May your better be blessed. Us.
Yes, sir. Us. Hi.
really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.